First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
It's a double whammy for Florida. More illness and death at the same time, housing costs are going up. Sorry to bring you down on a Monday morning, but that is the news. Good morning, and thanks for listening to First Coast Connect. I'm Melissa Ross. And just ahead, we'll tell you how COVID cases have doubled across the state, just as more affordable housing for Florida renters is out of reach. A new study says, get on the line now, join us. Then later, a little music to try to perk you up, which we need. It's our Turntable Tuesday on Jacksonville Music Experience. But first, this hour, the latest numbers on the pandemic. Keep in mind, the state is only putting these out once a week now, not every day. So it's difficult to get a true picture. But here's what we can tell you. The state on Friday announced 45,449 new cases of COVID since July 9th. That is nearly double the level of new statewide cases from the previous week, more than four times the levels we were seeing in June. The White House says Florida now accounts for 20% of all new COVID cases in the U.S., one in five. 231 new deaths reported around the state last week. The CDC says these new cases are almost exclusively among people who are not vaccinated. Not only that, Jacksonville and our surrounding counties is the part of the state that is driving the surge of COVID. We have the highest week-to-week growth of infections, especially Baker and Nassau counties, but also Duval County as well. Keep in mind, this is because of people who have not yet been vaccinated. So we say this all the time on this show. We'll say it again today and every day because the message is simply not getting through. Younger people and unvaccinated people are the ones now filling up hospitals. If you are going to the hospital with COVID-19, it's because you can't breathe and you need oxygen. And in serious cases, you will be put on a ventilator. You can avoid all of that if you get the vaccination. So go to your nearest Walmart, CVS, Walgreens, Publix, any grocery store or pharmacy on your neighborhood corner. Walk in and get the vaccine. You don't need an appointment and it's free, people. You are putting yourself at risk by not getting vaccinated. This is real. This Delta variant is serious and highly contagious, and serious cases of COVID and deaths are on the rise once again, and we are a hotspot in Jacksonville. So if you've been vaccinated and you have family and friends who haven't been, talk to them. Encourage them to get vaccinated for their own protection and that of their loved ones. And in other news this Monday morning, the National Low Income Housing Coalition is out with a new report. It's called Out of Reach. And what this does is give us a look at the state of housing affordability for low-income families in Florida. Shannon Nasworth is CEO of Ability Housing, and she's on the line. Shannon, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Great to have you. And as we talk about affordable housing, let us know, everybody, if you're struggling to make the rent, give us a call. It's 549-2937. 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. So what does this new report tell us about what's happening in Jacksonville and Northeast Florida? People struggling to keep a roof over their heads, Shannon.
It really does show us that. Every year, the coalition issues an analysis nationwide of how renters are doing with regards to wages versus housing costs. And every year, unfortunately, the issue is getting worse. Jacksonville is the same as the rest of the country. The amount of money it takes to earn, just to afford a simple one-bedroom or two-bedroom apartment is basically two full-time jobs. You know, if you're a single working parent and you need a two-bedroom apartment, you've got to earn $21 an hour in order to be able to afford a standard two-bedroom apartment in the Jacksonville market. And a lot of jobs just don't pay those kind of wages.
So a standard two-bedroom in Jacksonville is over $1,000 a month, right?
Yes. Right, yeah. Now they're saying it's $1,113 a month on average.
Right, and that's out of reach for folks making, you know, below $40,000 a year. About 36% of all households in our area are renters. So at Ability Housing, you work with families like that, trying to find them a place to live. And it's tough to find affordable housing everywhere in this city, but not just in this city. Right, Shannon?
It really is. This is not unique to Jacksonville. Unfortunately, there is no community in our country that someone earning minimum wage can earn, can afford an apartment on one job alone. It's just wages have not remotely kept up with the cost of housing. And with all of the influx we're seeing in new people moving to Florida and the Jacksonville area, while that's wonderful in many ways, it's just going to cause more pressure on the housing market, which is going to make the issue even worse.
Yeah, and it's 549-2937 as we talk about this now. Shannon, this data comes out as the eviction moratorium that the Centers for Disease Control set early on in this pandemic. That is set to expire at the end of this month. So these two huge pressure points are interacting for people in this state, people who are at risk of COVID and people who are unemployed because of the pandemic. They've been staying in their homes because there's an eviction moratorium that is about to end unless the state decides to extend it. There are still a lot of people out of work who can't pay the rent. And so tell us about your concerns for the month of August if the moratorium expires and people are evicted in greater numbers.
It is a great concern, and I don't know that anyone truly knows the numbers of individuals at risk, but we know that it's thousands of people across our state are at grave risk of being evicted when the moratorium ends. And there's the possibility the CDC could decide to continue it, but I wouldn't count on that. But I do want people to know if they are having trouble paying the rent, especially if it's COVID-related, there is assistance. The federal government has deployed a great deal of resources. The city of Jacksonville, call 630-CITY to find out how to get access to rental assistance. And for others, the Department of Children and Families also has rental assistance programs. Go to their website, myfloridafamilies.com, I believe. There is information there. And also for landlords. Some of this assistance can go to the landlord directly. If they can show that the tenant isn't able to pay due to COVID, the landlord can get the assistance directly as well. Anybody is facing that problem, please avoid the crisis, avoid the eviction, get the assistance.
We're talking with Shannon Nasworth, CEO of Ability Housing. Give us a call, 549-2937. You know, the CDC ordered this moratorium to slow the spread of COVID. They thought a rash of evictions would further spread the disease, not to mention the pain of being out on the street economically. Courts have upheld this order. It has been extended four times. The order was first issued back in September. The CDC says it issued its final extension June 24th, Shannon. But renters have to prove they are unable to pay rent because of the pandemic. It also only covers those who expect to earn under $1,000 a year for 2021. Some states are extending the eviction moratorium. We haven't heard yet if Florida is going to do that. And as you said, there is emergency rental assistance available. That came through the federal government and the American Rescue Plan Act and also the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2021. The money comes according to a state's share of population. But it can be difficult for people to access these funds, to unlock these funds. So, you know, what's your advice for folks who are completely overwhelmed? They don't even know where to begin to try to get this emergency rental assistance.
It can be very overwhelming. Of course, you're in crisis when you're concerned that you and your family are going to be evicted from your home. And no one doesn't want to pay their rent and honor their obligations, but they're just in a financial situation where they can't. And that in and of itself is stressful. But I do suggest they reach out to their local government, whichever community they live in. That government will be able to tell them how they can access these resources. Start now. It may not be an easy process, but it's not a super onerous process either. But you can't begin if you don't actually make the call and get started. there is a lot of resources. The federal government has been very concerned about this. They want to avoid evictions. They know the ramifications. If a family gets evicted, it is exponentially harder for them to obtain housing in the future because they have an eviction on their record. It has been shown that evictions will perpetuate poverty. And as we know, everybody is working very hard to reduce the number of people, especially children, living in poverty. And if we can avoid evictions, that really will make this happen. So we've all got to do what we can to help these families get the resources they deserve and need.
If you go to the website for the National Low Income Housing Coalition, they have a national database that can help you access rental assistance. We'll talk more about that in a moment. But first, let's go to your calls, 549-2937. John at the Beaches. Hi, John. Good morning.
Good morning. You do a great number of great shows, Melissa, about the lack of affordable housing in Jacksonville and Duval County. I'm just wondering if the public housing agency in this area has done anything at all in the way of developing housing first programs where you get people off the street and provide services, or are they like exploring ways of building mixed income housing using tax credits? I was involved with the Housing Authority back west, and we developed a ton of this, and we markedly, significantly decreased the number of homeless people in our area. Is anything like that going on around here?
It actually is, and I'm so glad you asked those questions, John. We just so happen to have the perfect guest on today to answer your questions. Shannon Nasworth, Ability Housing, can you bring us up to date on all of these efforts?
Absolutely. So Jacksonville has embraced a Housing First philosophy. We collectively, all the nonprofits involved with our continuum of care to help homeless individuals, are doing everything we can to take people straight off the streets and put them into housing. And our Housing Authority has gotten new resources through some of these relief plans. More vouchers are available that have to be coordinated with our continuum of care so that we're identifying the people most at risk, getting them those vouchers and directly into housing. So Jacksonville really is leaning in hard and has seen progress. We've seen a reduction in the number of people identified as literally homeless on our streets year over year, which is, you know, an outcome of all of this work. I also know that the Housing Authority has worked on mixed income housing. In fact, out in Jacks Beach, they did a redevelopment of an old property there that is now mixed income housing. So it is something that they are trying to do. Unfortunately, the resources to do that, to develop new housing, are limited. But, you know, they are trying to access those tax credits and other resources available to create more housing. But in the end, it's going to take all of us working together because we need more resources dedicated to creating new housing units that are affordable. Vouchers are very, very important, and we have to have more of them. But if there aren't units at which to use those vouchers, they don't have any value. So we also need more housing units.
Yeah. And while the effort to get people off the streets is so important, can you also talk a little bit more about the other bucket of people that we sort of began the hour with discussing? People who are working, they were laid off, maybe they've gone back to work in recent months, but they owe so much back rent and they're trying to work with their landlords. They're struggling, you know, people that are working but have just had a terrible time in this pandemic. What about that group of people?
It really is. It's been a hard year for everybody. I think we've collectively have had a case of PTSD coming out of all of this. Mm-hmm. But if you were at risk of losing your housing, if you were one of those most impacted financially and the insecurity around that, that is really traumatic for you and your family. And people have been working hard. Some are back at work, but they still have many months of arrearages. They are still eligible for that assistance. If your arrearage is due to COVID, even if they're working now, they can apply for that assistance. So I encourage them to reach out immediately to get all the help that they can. It is there. The federal government really has deployed a great deal of resources to every community in our state to help people avoid evictions. But they can't give you the money if you don't ask for it. So people do have to do their part.
Sure. And again, as you said, an easy way to start is to call 630-CITY, right?
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. If you live in Duval County, call 630-CITY. If you're in another community, call that call your local government. They will tell you how to access these resources.
A new study says affordable housing is increasingly out of reach for Florida, just as COVID cases double and the national moratorium on evictions is set to expire soon. So all of these pain points are coming together, unfortunately, folks. Lots of calls. We have information and resources here with Shannon Nasworth, CEO of Ability Housing, our guest this morning. Let us know your story. 549-2937. Deborah on the West Side. Hi, Deborah.
Yes, ma'am. How you doing?
Great, thanks. So what's going on with you?
Yes, please. I need help for my son. I've been helping him for rent for more than 2 years now, and I can't afford it anymore. Please, if you can find like one-bedroom apartment for him.
Okay. Sure, Deborah. So, Shannon, can you hook Deborah and her family up? What should she do?
So the two immediate resources I would go to is the Jacksonville Housing Authority. They are the local housing authority that administers the vouchers and also owns apartments that are affordable. Get on their wait list. The other place I would go to is flhousingsearch.org. Our state housing finance authority has a statewide database that is searchable on the web. They can tell you all affordable units in the Duval County area and the criteria for getting into them. And so take a look. Maybe there's something there that meets your needs. Unfortunately, the need that is far greater than the supply, but you may be lucky. There may be some availability and some units available that meet your criteria. So those are the first two resources I would look at.
Deborah, I hope that's helpful to you.
Please tell me the web again, please.
Can you repeat?
It's flhousingsearch.org.
flhousingsearch.org, Deborah.
Is this a search?
Yeah, flhousingsearch.org.
Okay.
Good luck, okay, Deborah. Hope that helps. Thanks for calling, too. 549-2937. Sam in Orange Park. Hi, Sam. Good morning.
Hi.
Oh, Samantha.
Good morning. So I'm a landlord of 12 years, and I have a lot of units throughout the city of Jacksonville. And I think the biggest dilemma for a lot of landlords and tenants, the program that came out, I guess the United Way or the Jewish Network or Committee was over this particular, the last program that came out that had all these millions of dollars to help. My tenants, four of them applied in May, the end of May. On Friday, 7/16 is when I finally got approved. Keep in mind, we all turned everything in on the same day in May. And it took all this time, an additional 2 months, for my tenants to get approved. Had the moratorium been up at the end of June, I would have filed eviction on all four of them because it's still a business for me. I haven't received rent for some of these people since last year. So this has to be streamlined if we're really trying to save people from being evicted. The other issue, I think, why there's not enough affordable housing is because Section 8 changed their program maybe two, three years ago. And it's all the payments now are based on zip code. If you're in 32208, 32209, you're barely getting $700-$800 a month for rent. No one has a house that they can rent out with the purchase and insurance for $700 or $800 a month. It's just not feasible. It's not doable for a regular landlord to do. And that is why there's not enough housing for people.
Yeah.
Low income people cannot afford because Section 8 pull the carpet from under them and lower the rate. It doesn't work. And I heard your guest tell the last caller to contact Section 8 and get on the list. I have tenants who've been on the waiting list for 6 years and still don't have a voucher yet. So again, that's another one that needs to be fixed. So sending people to these websites, there's no real help. There's no real help.
Wow.
And this is coming from somebody who's been in the business the last 12 years and seen it change and have tenants who struggle every month to pay their rent, but they've been on the waiting list for 5 years to get Section 8 housing and still don't have it till this day.
Sam, I really appreciate you calling in. It's really good to get the insight and perspective of a landlord, so thanks for that. So Shannon Nasworth, Ability Housing, you know, what about that? And the city of Jacksonville still has a lot of CARES Act money it could spend to help citizens like this.
Absolutely. So one, I want to say that I agree. We need to do everything we can to make everything as efficient as possible. And the Housing Authority does have a wait list, and it is long, but it is because the supply does not meet the demand. If you don't get on the wait list, you'll never get a voucher. And sometimes people will have special criteria that might make them eligible to get a priority preference if they have disabilities and different medical conditions and things, maybe. And I don't want anybody to think there's any promises out there. But if you don't reach out and at least get on the list, you'll never get the housing. And with these new vouchers that are coming in, possibly you're eligible for those. But if they don't know you're looking, they can't help you. So, you know, I don't want to make anybody think that any of these options, as I said, are guaranteed housing. The need does not meet the supply does not meet the demand. We need more housing that is affordable to all of our working families. I will also say that I'm sure it is frustrating. We are a landlord as well. We have hundreds and hundreds of units. It is hard when you're going through these processes, and I commend you for being patient and trying to help your tenants and avoid eviction. And these are new programs. It takes time for the federal government to give you the rules and regs that you're operating within. And then the agencies have to figure out a process to be in compliance with all that funding and get the money out simultaneously. It's really hard. The first few months are always the hardest. So hopefully, and my fingers are crossed, you know, now they have their systems down and it will be much quicker, the time lag between when you apply and when somebody is verified as eligible. But I encourage everybody to reach out to whoever they've applied to, especially with the moratorium coming to an end. They do need to know come July 31st if they're, you know, if there's a probability that they're going to get it, if they can wait a couple of days more before they, you know, file that eviction, it'll just save them money. Evictions are costly, you know, again, nobody wants to do it.
And by the way,
but they also need their income.
Evictions, there's a moratorium on them, but that doesn't mean they've completely stopped. We've heard that there are still some evictions happening out there. Okay, lots of calls. Linnell in Mandarin. Hi, Linnell. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. So I know there's been a mention already of people who are already experiencing homelessness or street homelessness. Also, those who may be evicted if they're not able to pay their rent and not able to get access to CARES funds. But we're also seeing property owners who have decided to sell their properties and are now having their renters have to actually move out. So to get back to the lack of available housing inventory that's affordable, as we see people heading back to work at the end of the pandemic here, or not the end really, but so people are taking up two and three jobs making, you know, $12 and $13 an hour. So I just wonder what we're doing about the price of the supposable housing inventory that's out there as far as rental property goes.
Sure.
Thank you.
Shannon.
As we said, unfortunately, we're not doing enough. We need to do more. And if the problem, unfortunately, is really only going to get worse. Our housing market is getting tighter and tighter. And when any market is squeezed, those at the low income end are the ones who are going to get hurt the most. Last year, the University of Florida estimated there are over 35,000 households earning 50% or less of our area median income, paying more than 50% of their household income for their housing. That is not sustainable. Our public schools are seeing the number of students identified as homeless or unstably housed increase every single year. We have to do something
have to do more.
Provide housing.
Here's a tweet from a listener. He says, I'm an Army veteran who used the forbearance program on my mortgage. My bank is now telling me I have to pay back the $9,000 I owe in full or they will foreclose. How is this possible? What program will help veterans keep their homes?
I have to be honest, I do not know very much about the home ownership forbearance programs. I would definitely reach out to the VA. I'm sure they have specialists who are trying to help the veterans. And then, of course, reach out to 630 City. They are familiar with a lot of the federal programs, both the ones they administer, but they may be able to refer them to another organization that is helping with home ownership and mortgage forbearances. I'm really not sure on those programs.
But that gives you an idea of how widespread the pain is out there. All of the questions we got on this program, again, as Shannon says, call 630 City to start out with. If you're having trouble getting funds to make your rent, there is federal money available. And email us at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. If you have follow-up questions, we'll try to connect you to resources that way. Thank you so much, Shannon Nasworth, CEO of Ability Housing in Jacksonville.
Thanks for being on.
Yeah. And much more still ahead. Later in the hour, we will lighten things up a little bit. It's Turntable Tuesday this week, and our Jacksonville music experience. We'll take a listen, but up next.
We decided to build a spec office building in a town center. It hadn't been done in a long time and was considered somewhat risky, but we were confident it would work out, and it did.
Rolling the dice on real estate. That's in today's First Coast Success. We'll be right back.
Today's segment of First Coast Success is brought to you by Iberia Bank.
Well, he has successfully developed, stabilized, and sold a wide range of real estate assets across the Southeast. In today's First Coast Success, Karen Bernie Mathis of the Jax Daily Record speaks with Don Carey, Executive Vice President of Van Trust Real Estate.
Don Carey started his career in 1976 as a CPA with Price Waterhouse. He moved into commercial real estate in 1981 with Trammell Crow Company. Now, 40 years later, he intends to retire at year-end as the Executive Vice President of Van Trust Real Estate for Florida. It's been no typical career. He started with no real estate sales experience and had to cold call his way into the industry. Since then, he has completed dozens of high-profile property deals, including Imeson Park in North Jacksonville and Flagler Center in South Jacksonville. John Carey, welcome to First Coast Success.
Thank you, Karen. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Well, what do you consider the most consequential deal you've led in Northeast Florida, and why?
You know, Karen, I think that was a kind of a hard question, but in thinking back, I honestly think a couple of years ago with Van Trust, when we decided to build a spec office building in Town Center 1, after over 10 years without a spec building, I think that was really something that hadn't been done in a long time and was considered somewhat risky, but we were confident it would work out, and it did.
And Town Center has been in the news because the other building you built there, Town Center 2, now has a new owner.
It does. I think Dun & Broad Street is going to be occupying that building. And we built Town Center 1, and we had an additional 15 acres and move forward with Town Center 2, which was originally a build-to-suit for Web.com. And they were purchased and moved out, but now I see it's going to be for Dun & Broad Street. So that's great. That's fantastic.
So your buildings have brought in a lot of employees, not to mention corporate headquarters.
They have. They sure have. And Town Center, that's such a great location, and there really wasn't a lot of land there left, and we grabbed that, and it's worked out very well.
Well, you were a CPA. Why did you want to join commercial real estate?
Well, I attended the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. I wanted to major in business and finance, and I was counseled that if I wanted to be in business, that going ahead and getting some additional training in accounting and even spending the time to get my CPA would be a good thing down the road. So I really did that really more as a background to figure out what I wanted to do. And that's where, after that, kind of real estate development came in.
I don't think a lot of people become CPAs and then try to figure out what they want to do.
Well, it's not the easiest thing to do, but it was a lot of fun. And the great thing about it was it exposes you to a tremendous amount of different businesses, and that was really the appeal. And I worked with some real estate development companies, and I felt like that's where I wanted to focus.
Well, Flagler Center, which is 1,000 acres, I don't think a lot of people realize that, and Imeson Park, which is about 156 acres, they both feature big corporate names. How did you recruit such companies? And we're talking about Citicorp and Amazon.com.
Sure. Well, Flagler Center, obviously, we developed in the early 2000s, and we took the time to put in some tremendous infrastructure, roads, landscaping, et cetera. And I remember, actually, John Payton was the mayor at the time, and Jacksonville was working very hard to recruit Citicorp, and we had the land, and they were looking for a large parcel to move their Citicorp headquarters, and it just sort of came together.
And those are big companies.
Huge companies, and I know cities continue to grow in Jacksonville, so it's been a great thing for the city.
Well, what has been your real estate strategy? Everybody knows that not all projects are successful, but by and large, yours have been.
Well, I think to some extent we've been very fortunate in that regard. You know, we try to pick excellent locations and we try to build the right products. But I think it's really much more than that. It's about working hard for the companies we serve. I'd like to think that our team, we view ourselves more as strategic advisor to the companies we work with. We don't try to come off as if we're just selling our product, doesn't matter. We really try to work hard to get the best solution for clients, and I think that tends to work out very well. It's relationship-driven, really.
And that was one of my questions. How important are relationships in business? You moved up the ranks basically based on recommendations from and by people you know.
Well, I tell you, again, I think the most important quality we have is our honesty and integrity. Be honest, be upfront, you know, treat people fairly. If you do that, you're going to be successful, and I think that's kind of been my mantra, and you know, it's treated me well over the years.
What would be the most important advice you would give to anyone who's starting a career today?
Well, again, going back to what I just said, I think I think a lot of people come into any business, but real estate, obviously, you know, typically they have the basic skill set to be successful, but It's the integrity and honesty that I think really distinguishes people that are going to be successful in the long run. That sounds very simple, but it's harder to execute, you know, day in and day out.
It's a highly competitive industry.
It is very competitive, and you know, you just have to sort of not worry about the competition. You just have to do your best, put your best foot forward, and it'll work out.
Good advice. Well, talk about Jacksonville and Northeast Florida. Where do we rank when it comes to companies who want to expand and relocate here?
Well, you know, I've spent some time in a number of, I've worked in you know, Tampa and Orlando and Jacksonville. And, you know, I think Jacksonville really has a lot going for it. You know, for one thing, Jacksonville has a very attractive cost of living here compared with other Florida markets. Our cost of labor is also, you know, very competitive. But I think maybe the thing that sets us apart is the variety of lifestyle choices we have in Jacksonville. I don't know too many places where, you know, you can live at the beach or you can live on the river, either side. You know, you can live in historic Avondale, which is, you know, really some great older homes. Or you can have a farm, you know, out on the west side with some animals. So, you know, that's really a diversified amount of choices. And I think that gives us a really great advantage when people are considering moving to Florida.
And not to mention housing costs from those relocating from the Northeast and the West Coast.
We look like a tremendous bargain, don't we? Some people come down here and say, I'll take two.
Well, as you kind of ease out after so many years, what do you think you're going to miss?
Well, you know, I'm going to miss the people that have had the people... the pleasure of people that I've worked with. You know, real estate development is I'd like to say it's more like being the conductor of an orchestra. I mean, you coordinate a lot of people, you know, coworkers, you know, you've got your consultants, architects, engineers, attorneys, et cetera, et cetera. And you really have to work to just get everybody working together. And those have, you know, resulted in a lot of great relationships. And while I don't intend to lose them, I will miss doing that day to day.
Now, one thing that we talked about previously was, you know, some deals might be a little more difficult. Do you remember any you want to talk about, or?
You know, most deals, you know, you think you have them under control, and invariably there are some interesting twists and turns. So the key is just to hang on and keep working.
Well, what plans do you have?
Well, you know, certainly I plan on traveling. We've traveled a bit, but my wife and I would like to expand our travel, so we're going to do some of that. I think you know that I've been very active in the YMCA here in Jacksonville, and I plan on continuing my involvement there. That's such a terrific organization, and I don't know you're aware that, you know, I put a group together to develop some Alzheimer's centers. We own and operate three Alzheimer's centers here in Jacksonville and one in Charleston, as a matter of fact, so there's four. And, you know, obviously dementia is such a topic on everyone's mind today because it's as our population is aging, it's becoming People are learning more and more about what it is and how devastating a disease it can be. So we'll continue to own and operate those, and I spend a lot of time at those centers, and I look forward to continuing to do that.
Well, what else would you like to share?
Karen, I think I've covered it well. I really do. You know, I tell you, Jacksonville, we moved up here from Tampa in 1998, and I got to tell you, I thought Tampa looked pretty good. And I said, oh, my goodness, Jacksonville. And I must say, it's turned out to be, for both myself and my family, just what a tremendous place to be. And we look forward to being here for many, many years to come.
Oh, and you have some grandchildren to play with, too.
We have one now and one on the way, and both were here at the beach this weekend. So, yes, that'll take some time, too, Karen.
Well, John Carey, who is retiring at year-end after 40 years in the commercial real estate industry, thanks for joining First Coast Success.
Thank you, Karen.
A new study out of UNF could really make an impact in combating teen obesity rates. Dr. Natalie Mitchell is the principal investigator and joins us now. Dr. Mitchell, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And UNF conducted this study in partnership with Indiana University, Purdue, and UF Health Jacksonville, and you focused on Black teenage girls. Is that right?
Yes, we did.
So tell us about the findings. What did you learn?
Yeah, so we focus on African-American girls because the obesity rates are substantially high in general across the country, and in particular here in the city of Jacksonville. And the girls who participated in the study provided some very insightful findings, one of which is the importance of understanding that despite their body structures, maybe being athletes and thespians, they still desire to have a curvier shape, shape kind of like a Coca-Cola frame with a small waist and curves in their body frame. And then secondly, we learned that they, even at the age of, 14 and 15 years old, understand the importance of eating healthy, but that the BMI standard for weight is not appropriate for everyone. It's restrictive. It doesn't take into consideration diet, your genetics, et cetera, et cetera. And so they shared that potential advertising for anti-obesity campaigns targeted to girls should be all-inclusive. It should show girls of various sizes that are having a healthy lifestyle and not a focus on being a certain weight based upon your height.
And that is certainly not what most teenage girls get when they look at most advertising, right?
Right. So there's a heavy focus on being very petite, thin, and the like. And so, which is particularly more common among white girls, where they may not necessarily have a good, favorable perception of body image. But in this community, being confident in who you are, regardless of your size, is something that is a little bit more common. But they realize that not everyone is the same size. So they should show women or girls who are both thin and then in various sizes as well.
Okay. And you found some other interesting stuff when you surveyed African-American teenage girls about what they're eating. Can you talk about that too?
Yes. So some of them are eating healthy, and then some of them realize that they're having to make a game time decision. And I can honestly say, many people were not that astute at 14 or 15 years old, where they realized that, okay, culturally, this is the food that I was raised on, and they're faced with challenges with cultural pressures to eat certain foods, but they recognize that it's not fully healthy. So they learn to kind of eat it in moderation and not all the time. So it kind of puts, tension and pressures between family gatherings during the holidays and the like, but they recognize that they have to maintain a healthy diet. They can't eat like that throughout the year.
Mm-hmm. So then what's the message that you're sending with this study, to the advertising industry? Because you collaborated on this with Purdue and also UF Health. This is a survey you did locally with teenage girls in Jacksonville, but it has ramifications across the country.
Absolutely. And so the message is targeted to both advertisers in addition to pediatricians and physicians that are treating this population. And so the primary message is that these individuals, these professionals, should reconsider their approach and patient care when discussing obesity plans, and not just saying, just eat these foods and exercise and you can lose weight, because you're criticizing their food cultural background and the consequences that are associated with it. Some girls don't have access to healthy food options, but they're being blamed for their body type, which is based upon genetics and you know, food deserts and the like. So the messaging to both advertisers and health professionals is to reconsider how they discuss patient plans for anti-obesity. And then secondly, it's also generalizable. So what we found here is not much different than what would likely occur in other parts of the country. So even though this was a study here in Jacksonville, it is still relevant across mm-hmm. the board. So this is designed for all doctors.
So when African-American teenage girls say they want a Coca-Cola frame, that is the ideal for them. The celebrities they say they most admire are Tiffany Haddish, Tyra Banks, celebrities like that who are curvy but fit. So what would you say to those who are concerned about the obesity epidemic overall, not just among this group, but for all Americans? And they feel that we need to be doing more to encourage healthy eating, combat food deserts, encourage exercise, and all of that.
Yes. So this study is just one actor in this huge conglomerate or ecosystem of healthcare disparities and issues. And so one of the things that we're really arguing with this paper is healthcare providers realizing that it's not a one size fit all. So if you have 100 teenage patients or just 100 patients who may not be where they should be health-wise, you can't give them a one-size-fits-all patient plan. Discuss with them their individual options based upon their lifestyle, what they have access to, and how they can make decisions that would benefit them in their current life that they live. So I think mm-hmm. that's where the focus should be, instead of just making this generic messaging for all, regardless of age, race, and size.
So then social media is where it's at. You have found through this study that teenage girls really respond to the messaging they're getting on their favorite social media platforms. Tell us more about yes. the directives there.
Yes, indeed. So because social media has, you know, both audio, visual, and it's, you know, accessible via mobile device, the girls reported that was the best way to reach them. And so in particular, like there's good messaging that comes through social media like Instagram and TikTok, and then there's also messaging that is not always healthy. And so because they are there, ideally this is where advertisers or healthcare organizations should consider doing the promotion. And even using celebrities who are of different sizes and ethnicities to showcase ways in which the messaging can be spot on. And again, when I say inclusive, not just with body type, but also with the type of messaging, stating that we can all be healthy at various sizes. So that's what they argued, that the messaging should be focusing on healthy lifestyles and focusing on healthy body types that fit for all.
Fascinating study. Media. She's the principal investigator at UNF, Dr. Natalie Mitchell. Thanks for sharing this with us.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
And in a moment, a little music as we preview the JME's Turntable Tuesday this week. Don't go away.
Flowers in the vase that you bought today. Staring at the fire for hours.
Oh, hey.
The Jimenez Facio House was built in 1798 during Florida's Second Spanish Period. I'm Ben Brookmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll visit the Jimenez Facio House Museum in St. Augustine. We'll discuss the Underground Railroad to Pensacola and Prospect Bluff. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on WJCT News 89.9.
I'm Don Gagne. The pandemic has shifted a lot of things, and for many people, that includes what they wear and the way they engage with their clothes.
All of these changes in the workplace, in the way that we socialize, have really meant a sense of liberation for people to dress in a way that feels true to yourself.
Post-pandemic fashion. Next time on Here and Now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Akash Kapoor about utopias, the impulse to build a better world, and what happens when dreams crash against reality. He was raised in an experimental community in India, left for school in the U.S. at age 16, and later returned to raise his own family. His new book is Better to Have Gone, Love, Death, and the Quest for Utopia in Auroville. Join us
today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
The Pentagon has confirmed that some of those arrested after last week's assassination of Haiti's president received training in the U.S. But much still remains unclear about who ordered the murder of Jovenel Moïse and why. We'll have the latest and ask what can end the country's constitutional chaos. That's next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Light the fire, and you place the flowers in the vase that you bought today. Staring at the fire for hours.
Welcome back. That's a cut that takes us back a little ways, and it's just a preview of our Turntable Tuesday tomorrow night on JME, the Jacksonville Music Experience. Music director and station manager David Luckin is here to tell us more. Hey, David.
Oh, that's such a nice song to start the day with,
isn't it?
Graham
yes.
Nash. We Have Got. It came out just Saturday on Record Store Day, a special alternate version of Deja Vu. It came out actually 51 years ago, but because of COVID, they didn't release it last year, the big 50th anniversary. They saved it for now. And we will play the whole album. And here's something special. If you listen, we're going to tell you how you can get a 48-track 50th anniversary Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young Deja Vu Anniversary Edition. It's got all these great songs, plus all the demos and all the alternate versions, and including when he said, I'll put the flowers in the vase you bought today.
Uh-huh.
Joni Mitchell and Graham Nash had just come home to their house in Laurel Canyon after going antiquing, and she bought the vase and he wrote the song.
Oh.
And one of the 48 tracks is Joni Mitchell singing it with him right after he wrote it.
Oh, fantastic.
So it's a great piece. And we will also remind people we're in our summer songs all summer long on Anthology HD3. We are playing all the great summer songs that you grew up with. So we're taking a quick break from that to bring us a special edition of Turntable Tuesday. And then Turntable Tuesday will come back after the summer. I got some other great records too, Melissa. I got a Miles that they only made 1,250 copies of. I got the Ocean's 11 soundtrack. I got a Bobby Gentry and Crosby, Stills, and Nash. All just rare and all very limited. And usually you stand in line. Because of COVID, a lot of us bought them online instead of standing in line.
Sure. It's amazing how vinyl endures. People still want to buy vinyl, and especially rare reissues like this one. And let's also take a moment to tell folks once again that only at JME can you hear this kind of music programming, which David and the folks here at the station have put together on our HD channels,
yep,
online at jacksmusic.org. Or through the WJCT app, you can listen to several different radio stations that we have programmed with cuts that you will never hear on commercial radio in the way that you've programmed them.
That is so true. And this is the perfect example of the alternate version of Deja Vu. We did the alternate version of Moondance earlier last year from Van Morrison. We also remind you that the Electro Lounge is starting to play more local music. I'm sorry, I'm getting lost here. As you speak of our three channels, we've got classical music on HD2, Anthology on 3, and Electro Lounge Radio on 4, and we're adding a lot more music there. So tune it in and find out what your local musicians are doing. And Anthology, of course, is just the best music from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. So Crosby, Stills, and Nash 50th or plus 1 year anniversary edition is a perfect fit.
Very cool. You know, as I look at this album you brought in, it shows Crosby, Stills, and Nash along with some other musicians on the cover and Young when they were really young guys. This came out in 1970. I don't know if I ever told you this story, but in the mid to late 90s, I got assigned once to interview Crosby, Stills, and Nash. I was the pool reporter for all of the Chicago television stations. Went in with a cameraman into this hotel ballroom and was told to wait for them to come in. There were three chairs set up. Crosby, Stills, and Nash walk in and say, and they don't say, hello, how are you? They say, we're not going to sit in order. I said, that's fine. Sit wherever you want.
Very nice.
So they sat down, Nash, Crosby, Stills, and then they said, we don't like that. Then they sat down, Stills, Nash, Crosby, and they said they didn't like that. Then after all this back and forth, they sat down in order, in a row, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and did the interview.
Of course.
And I just laughed so hard. And then at a certain point, we said, where's Neil Young? Because he was performing with them that night, and they all laughed and said, Neil doesn't like to fly. He's really annoying, and he won't fly, so he's not here yet.
Oh.
So that's my CSNY story.
I like that. I've got invited to the Florida Theater to shoot their sound check before they performed here once, and Graham was so nice, and I was walking around the stage just shooting him while they were singing Blackbird, and David Crosby said, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, Graham Nash
couldn't be nicer. And Graham was the nicest one of all. And
yeah,
I said, we're here to promote your concert.
We're
going to put this on the 6 o'clock news and sell some tickets. And he just kind of looked at me like, okay.
Yeah, that was my recollection too. Graham Nash was pretty much the nicest one of the three. Yeah.
But a treat to meet them in any way you can and stand there and talk to them.
Okay, so once again,
9 o'clock tomorrow night.
9 o'clock tomorrow night.
Turntable Tuesday Anthology. It's on the WJCT app or HD3. And enjoy all the songs you know, but they're just different. The solos are different. The vocals are different. And then enter your name. We'll tell you how to do it, and you're going to get to win. We've got actually 7 copies of this 48 digital package. So 7 people are going
to
win.
And how can people enter right now?
You can't. You're going to have to listen to the show. Got to
listen to the show.
Yeah, tune in and enjoy Anthology's tribute to Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young's Deja Vu 51 years later. We're calling it the 50th anniversary, but it's really 51 years. It's a beautiful album. We'll fill out the rest of the hour with some other treats. So join us on Anthology. And join us all summer long as we play summer songs. We're just playing songs that came out in the summer. And I think,
and here's one right now.
There you go. We're going to leave you with some nice music. Thank you for inviting me in, Melissa.
Thank you for creating the Jacksonville Music Experience. Enjoy the music, everyone. And we'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow.
The one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why. If they told you, you would cry. So just look at them and sigh. I know they love you.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.